Good morning, Vietnam. We're recording from the studio here at Vietcetera in Ho Chi Minh City. We've got two guests of mine. They're very longtime friends. I call them sisters, even in a way. We have Mimi Vu and Vung Lee. They're partners at Raise, which is an ESG-focused consultancy, though they do much more than that, and we'll hear it from them themselves. We're here this morning to kind of recap this ESG investor conference that we did together in collaboration with Raise and Vietcetera about a couple months back. And still a lot of chatter about it, but we want to take this opportunity through this podcast to kind of extend that conversation beyond just that one event. Look forward to next year, but also hear from these two ladies about what else they're doing. It's much more than just an event. Welcome to the studio today, both of you.
Thank you.
It's great
for having
you. Yes. And before we get started with the main conversation of the podcast today, we're just going to start with some rapid fire questions. So please answer them as short as possible. We're talking like one sentence. There's no right, no wrong answer. They're fun, lighthearted, hopefully. Let's get started.
Okay.
So both of you will answer. So I'll start with Vung for this first question. What brought you to Vietnam?
I wanted more experience in working in Vietnam. I wanted to work in international development, and I wanted to see sort of the positive changes that were happening here.
And over to you, Mimi.
I was working in international development, and my dad made me apply to work in Vietnam, whereas I wanted to go to Africa. And I said, I will go wherever I get a job first, and it turned out to be Vietnam.
Amazing. Hopefully inspiring for our younger listeners from overseas today. What keeps you in Vietnam?
For me, it's several things. Number one is the work. Vietnam is constantly changing. I've been here for almost 17 years, and the energy is amazing still, and there's still a lot of work to do and where areas where we can always make an impact. The food, the weather, and quality of life. You can definitely have a very, very good life here.
And for you, Vung?
What keeps me in Vietnam? Two things. Number one, this is a very young country. Every year I've been here, I thought to myself, okay, I'll decide at the end of the year if this is the final year, right? But then 1 year became 2 years, became 15 years. And what keeps me here is really seeing how quick things are to change and the young people in Vietnam, how open they are to moving things.
If you had to describe your work in three words, what would it be?
Impact, partnership, community.
I would say impact, development, and economics.
What are the changes Raise hopes to make in Vietnam?
I think something that we're really, really good at is brokering partnerships between government, corporates, and civil society. The reason why that's important is because some of these really big development challenges that Vietnam needs to overcome, has to be done through partnership. And I think we're very good at putting together really interesting, innovative partnerships.
So what we want to accomplish here is helping Vietnam, the country, the private sector, government, and civil society understand about intersectionality, how each issue or challenge that we have in this country is not only can be solved by multi-stakeholder partnerships, but the issues influence each other. And so when we're developing solutions, which is what we help with, it has to encompass all these different issues. So for example, when you look at climate change, you're not only looking at weather or environment or private sector, but you're also looking at local communities, human behavior, government policies, and also economics. Economic policy. So,
on a Sunday at 10 a.m., where would you be and what would you be doing?
I will probably still be sleeping or getting ready for brunch.
And over to you, Vung.
Eating. So maybe going out for pho or coffee on a sidewalk somewhere. That's definitely 10 o'clock Sunday, yeah.
And what's your favorite Vietnamese word or phrase?
Ooh, I learned this phrase a long time ago. Nhịp sống. It's like the rhythm of life. It's like And I think it's something that's very Vietnamese, right? It's something that it's like the bustling kind of nature of things. And
okay, so this is a weird one, but it's always one that I use to illustrate how the visual Vietnamese language is. it's a little bit weird. But op cha, which is walnut. But I didn't know this growing up. And so when I first moved to Da Nang, which is where I lived in Vietnam when I first came here, one of my colleagues asked me if I wanted to eat op cha. And then finally he pulled out a bag of walnuts and I just thought, oh my gosh, they do look like little dog brains. So for me, that is like so what I love about Vietnamese language is that it's so illustrative like that.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
And confusing.
Amazing. So walnuts, let's get a bag for her after this. Thank you both for just kicking off today's conversation with those fun little tidbits. Let's dive straight into it. raise partners. I think a lot of those that are in the government sector, for instance, and private sector focused on ESG and other principles know the two of you and raise. Mm-hmm. But for those of you that don't, that are listening to today's podcast, I'd love to hear from you. So I'll start with Mimi mm-hmm. for this question.
So what we do at Raise Partners, we are a social, environmental, and ESG impact consulting practice. So what we do is we work with private sector, NGOs, governments on helping them to develop the strategy and develop the solutions and develop the partnerships to solve any sort of environmental, social, or ESG-related challenges or opportunities that they may have. So it's really, you know, it's consulting, so it's wide open. And so what we do exactly depends on who the client is. What we do is very tailored to the client, the client's needs.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And who are some of these potential clients? I'll bump it over to Vung to answer that.
So the types of people that we're working with include like small, medium enterprises who are already doing really great things in their companies. Mm. Maybe they're already thinking about environmental impact or social, but they need to pull together a core strategy, right? And understand how to measure the kinds of outcomes that they're looking for. We're also working with governments on different development projects, for example, gender equality or helping nonprofits understand fundraising, these kinds of things. We're working with philanthropists. So one of our greatest clients called Asia Philanthropy Circle. So they're a group of ultra high net worth philanthropists from Southeast Asia who are looking for projects in Vietnam and may want to know who the right partners are to work with. Mm. So across a big scheme of clients.
Fantastic. Well, if any of that fits your criteria, reach out to these two. Let's take the opportunity to reflect on this ESG Investor Conference, Vietnam ESG Investor Conference that we did. And just want to give a big thanks to Raise for initiating this, Vietcetera, as the platform, as the event company, more than an event company, but the one taking care of the event. We need experts like you guys to make those events come to life and to deliver the best content possible. What were some of the key takeaways? And let's also start with why the two of you even wanted to do this in the first place.
This idea came about just a year ago. So I'm still amazed that it happened from idea to fruition so quickly. And I had a meeting, a casual meeting with a friend of a friend who was a new investor to Vietnam.
Okay.
And my friend had just asked me to explain Vietnam to him. I said, okay, I'll explain whatever. So we ended up meeting for about 2 hours, and I talked about everything, you know, climate issues, state of civil society, human trafficking, environmental issues, economic, everything. Things that, you know, from a development perspective that Van and I have worked on and that we are very interested in. And he was taking notes the whole time, and he was saying, you know, the conference that he was currently attending, he's like, why aren't these issues being talked about at the conference? He's like, this is the information I need to know if I'm going to make any sort of investment decision for Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And so I looked at the agenda at the conference, and it was as if COVID-19 didn't happen. It was as if, you know, it was very heavily focused on investment, but also just all maybe some climate in energy, but nothing else when it comes to economic development, social issues, all these things that are that do influence the state of the economy. You know, and he said, I wish there was a conference that talked about what you talked about. And I thought, you know, okay, I said to Van right away, I was like, I think we need to do an ESG conference. And so it was important for us to get this off the ground because we knew that also ESG was becoming very rapidly a buzzword, but it wasn't being talked about in the context of Vietnam. So what you have is the West has more, Western markets have more advanced ESG practices, but it's very tailored to the Western market. And on top of that, they're very heavily focused on environmental and climate. Whereas whenever you come into an emerging market, you have to look at how human behavior, social behavior, which is influenced by economic opportunities or lack thereof, influences environmental issues, plastic waste, and energy. All these things are intersectional. We're used to working at it from that way and looking at it from that way from a development perspective. And so what we've been trying to do is take that and apply it to private sector. So we thought, okay, we can do this for Vietnam and really also set the standard for what ESG looks like within the context of Vietnam. ESG strategy, ESG investment opportunities, and even the language of ESG. So from then on, we met up with you and you know, Hao jumps on things very quickly, said, okay, we'll do it. We'll do it. No, and then from there, yeah, it happened really, really fast.
Yeah. I think I remember some of our partners were kind of nervous. They were like, are you sure you could do this in time? Yeah. And we're like, we're doing it. We're not delaying anything.
How confident are you that people are going to show up? Oh, we're pretty confident. Yeah.
I think it tells a lot about, like you said, the demand for this kind of content because it's just not being spoken about enough. Yet there is that demand. And this platform managed to start kickstart that conversation and ignite a few more outcomes, which I want to lead over to that now as well. And Vung, I'll kick it over to you. What were some of the key takeaways for not only Raise and Vietcetera as the stakeholders and organizers, but also the sponsors, the partners, even the attendees? You know, I've been telling people that I didn't do anything for the content side. I mean, you guys, well, first the event team did everything.
And That's not quite true, but yeah.
And then you two did all the content. And yes, I was there. I helped with things, but I actually didn't review the content. I don't think I told you guys. And the team
it's
was so nervous.
Trust-based partnership.
The team wanted to like do meetings with me and be like, how did you review the content yet? And I'm like, no. And I was like, you know, if I depend on these two ladies enough and they should be able to pull through, why do I have to review anything? So I actually showed up to the conference as if I was a guest. And I was listening to almost all the content and I was like, oh, cool. That's great. I know more than the average person, of course, but I'm not in depth as you two are. And so it was quite the privilege just to sit there and listen. What were some of those takeaways and even follow-ups from your perspective that
So I think as Mimi had talked about, one of the things that we both saw was that investors were having one kind of conversation when talking about investing in Vietnam and the kinds of criteria they were looking at that go across this ESG sort of landscape. And then the expectations of Vietnamese companies and what that those conversations would look like was very different. And so I think one of the successful things about the conference in the way that we organized the themes was that we were able to highlight the different kinds of financing that's available, right? It's like huge infrastructure development financing to really like impact investors who care just as much about the social and environmental impact as the profit and the revenue coming back. And then across the themes of like climate and really interesting sort of hot topics, right? Renewable energy transition, all of these things, and putting into context with really practical case studies. And the reason why I think I'm proud of the outcomes is the conversations that we were able to start then lead to better discussions towards investing, you know, deals. So what we heard from people was that that was the first time that that had been done over a course of 2 days. They had met the right kinds of people. They were having the right kinds of conversation. And they had better expectations on how they would facilitate those.
I think, and one shortcoming that we had to reflect on feedback is, and our partners knew it too, was we all knew this was put together last minute. And when I say last minute, it still wasn't that last minute relative. Like I think 2 months we released tickets or whatever it was. And but for investors coming from the US, from Europe, from Australia, that's actually not that long of a leadway. So feedback for us is like, hey, we're launching this right after this podcast, actually. We're going to be discussing the dates for next year. So people know 3, 4, 5, 6 months in advance, even longer potentially. So that'll be exciting to see, bringing even more people to the table. And that couldn't come on a last minute basis to really understand what's going on in Vietnam.
If I can just add, I think we got really specific about what does investing in environmental outcomes look like. What does social inclusion mean? Like investing in women, like what are the benefits of that? And that is something that really, I think, shined through too.
We touched upon how we can improve our next event with the timing, for example. And again, not a huge shortcoming, but definitely something to keep an eye out so we can have even more people attending this program. What are some other areas that you see that this event, but also the greater industry, should demand more of so that we can deliver that content in the future?
I feel like there should be more sector-specific events that delve deeper into the intricacies and the nuances of ESG in each sector.
So energy,
fashion, manufacturing, apparel and footwear manufacturing, you know, solar manufacturing, like different types of manufacturing. These are all really amazing opportunities in Vietnam that if done, invested in properly with the right partnerships, could actually do several things. Number one is not just, you know, be very profitable, but number two, actually help make a significant dent in the challenges that we as a country are facing. If we want, I mean, Van and I are, you know, at our core, we are development people. We will always be development people. And our goal has been and always will be to make sure that Vietnam develops as well as possible, all across the board, whether it's economically, environmentally, socially, everything. And so that's our mindset when we come in and look at all these things. And so we have a very strategic way of doing things where we want to make sure that, you know, it doesn't stay at the surface level. And hopefully this conference has shown, you know, organizers of other events, the level of detail and the level of the depth of discussion that is truly needed in order to move things ahead when it comes to investment, developing partnerships. Some of the comments that were, you know, made to me, not in a you know, flippant or mean way, but just kind of as an offhand, and I think this is indicative of the, you know, conference sector, is that, oh, in Vietnam especially, oh, is this like another marketing event? Or I'm like, marketing for who? Or, you know, some of our panelists were saying, oh, you know, I'm so glad the way you set this up, because with every panel discussion, we had extensive discussions with the moderator and the panelists to talk about what we were going to discuss and what the key takeaways for the audience we wanted. And so everything was laid out beforehand so that there was a action items, key takeaways, goals, and food for thought.
Let's talk about the marketing aspect of events, because that is needed in the sense that we need sponsorship and partners to make events happen. But sometimes, a lot of events in Vietnam, including ours, that's happened in the past for sure, is that they become too marketing and advertising events when they should actually be content events. Because at the end of the day, all the stakeholders, not just the organizers and sponsors, but also the audience, is involved in the success of that event. And that was a big learning for us, because us as a platform, our team, we have 60 full-time staff. We have people that know things. Not ESG as to the level that you two do. And we need the experts in order to fulfill that content requirement to actually make it an event, not a marketing event. And that was a big lesson for us. And I think for this event, we steered clear of that. I think we had excellent speakers and all that. But can we improve further? For sure, going more in-depth with the sectors that you mentioned and timing, as I mentioned before, among other things. But I think we have a lot to take away. And you know, if you're a sponsor, a partner, past, present, future, or an audience member, and you attended this event or couldn't but wanted to, drop a note in the comments. We'd love to hear from you about what we could do better as well. Moving ahead, I'd like to talk more about your work aside from the event as well. I understand you work with a lot of global companies here in Vietnam as well, and that's where a lot of the demand is, but they don't necessarily know where to start and why they're even interested in it. You know, we can talk about greenwashing a little bit as well. Maybe the two of you can share about how you select organizations to work with, because you can get some big name coming in and then you're like, wow, you know, they've got not only the budget, but, you know, on paper, they look like they're great. But maybe when you meet them, they don't even know where to start. How do you choose organizations to work with when they come to you? I'll start with Vung for that one.
I think it would be okay to say that most people don't know where to start. That's okay. But what we decided early on in the history of RAISE was that because Mimi and I are so interested or invested in impact, right? In the idea of impact and really making positive change. We wanted clients who already had the mindset or approach of wanting to do something and do it better. And so they were coming to us because they were hoping that we would help them with the strategies in order to make better positive impact in terms of reducing environmental impact or doing some sort of community partnership. And then the way that those, we sort of choose those clients, some of them will come to us just with a project. Maybe they only want to do, for example, build a community partnership that they were thinking about, but they don't know where to start. And some more like smaller, medium-sized enterprises need the roadmap, right? So they're already doing a lot of interesting things. They're already interested in making sure that their production methods are safe and healthy for their staff, but they need sort of a framework on how to go forward. And that's where we would come in. So we do our own sort of due diligence with clients because we don't want to pick someone that's just going to use us in order to greenwash, basically.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's a problem, greenwashing? Let's just start in the context of Vietnam.
For sure.
Over to you. Absolutely. It's not just greenwashing. It's pinkwashing. It's whatever
rainbow
other
washing.
Types of rainbow washing. Mm-hmm. We first started talking about ESG 4 years ago. The comments were like, is this another three-letter acronym that I have to know? Is this like the new CSR? What is it? So for a lot of companies initially who are new to ESG, it was like a checkbox thing. And I think it still is. And this is partly because of the way existing measurement frameworks, scoring systems are set up, where it is like a checkbox thing. And so they're like, hey, do whatever you need to do to make sure that box is checked. And so that automatically puts you in this mindset of like of surface level. Just make sure you have the right policies in place. Just check that box. And there's also that mindset that it's still a marketing exercise. It's just marketing. Whereas what we're trying to explain is that ESG is an actual business strategy. It's not an extra thing that you do. It's not, you know, CSR. Exactly. It's not an add-on. CSR can be put in the marketing budget. It can be, you know, employee engagement. It's extra.
Yep.
CSR sits under ESG, but ESG figures into your entire business plan.
Mm.
And so that's what we're trying to explain and help companies understand and develop the strategy to reflect that, that it's core.
I think another thing is about the mindset about the commercial side of things, because
people,
big and small companies rather, can perceive it as a cost center,
whereas
it could be and perhaps should be a revenue driver.
Yeah.
So maybe we could touch upon those two differences, driving revenue and a cost center for ESG implementation.
Yeah.
I'll start with Vung on that one.
I'll also say that, just stepping back for a minute, that one of the things that Mimi and I have in common in our career is that before, when we were working in the NGO sector and we were working as fundraisers and communications people, I think, and we were especially really good at working on partnerships with corporates, that entrance point may have started out where it was a very shallow intention, right, to do more community work, work in environmental outcomes. But through the partnership and through the project, at the same time, we're looking to deepen their understanding of actually what is the potential of this thing.
Mm.
This can be a revenue builder. This can be part of your brand. This can be a very powerful like way to build value into your company, right?
Mm.
And I think we're also doing that through Raise in our ESG work.
Okay. Let's hear some success stories. We've talked a lot about the event, which drives conversations and you know, potential outcomes. We talked a little about the principles of Raise and what you want to accomplish. How about a success story? I think I want to share one too for our audience so they can kind of paint a picture of, hey, can I fill myself in these shoes? Mimi, you can touch upon one or two.
I think one success story is we worked on, this is for an international NGO, who works in child protection. And so what they wanted was somehow include child protection against sexual exploitation into the travel and tourism private sector.
Okay.
Which is a very sensitive topic.
Mm-hmm.
And especially this was right after Vietnam reopened and, you know, trying to get tourists again. And the last thing that other stakeholders, meaning government and private sector, want to talk about is, oh, beware of, you know, sex tourists. But it is a real problem because so many kids dropped out of school permanently during COVID, and so they are now have turned into informal workers. And so children are disproportionately working in travel and tourism as informal workers, and so that makes them extremely vulnerable to any sort of abuse. And so it's not, you know, so what we did was work very closely with private sector. So Van and I co-founded, we're co-founding members of American Chamber of Commerce, AmCham, ESG committee. Van is co-chairwoman. I'm on the board with you on AmCham. I'm also on the board of BeluxCham, Belgian Luxembourg Chamber of Commerce. And so what I did was, what we were able to do was work with the tourism and hospitality committees of both chambers to explain the connection between incorporating child protection as a way to prevent exploitation, training your workers, whether it's reception staff, you know, cleaning, tour guides, everything that's hospitality and tourism involved, and that will help build up, protect, and build up Vietnam's reputation as a safe and beautiful tourism destination. Because the truth is, and this is something that everyone in the tourism and hospitality industry knows, is that once your country is marked as a destination for sex tourists, it's hard to get out from under that. It's very, very hard. It could be
okay.
Very, very,
like
very closely.
Ground.
Yeah, very shaky ground. Because during COVID, it was identified as, before and during COVID, it was identified as one of the most desirable countries for, and this is all based on online research, for potential perpetrators to come to, because they were doing a lot of online grooming. Okay. So we worked with the tourism and hospitality committees of both chambers, and then Martin Kerner, who is with Eurocham, one of the board members, and also the head of the tourism and hospitality committee for Vietnam Business Forum. He got it right away. And so he automatically was like, okay, I'm including provisions for hospitality training for child protection in the VBF's 5-year tourism action plan. And so that was presented at the annual meeting. And it was, you know, to the government and also to the rest of the private sector. And it was, the issue was desensitized. And then it's now considered a standard, you know, something standard practice.
Let's talk about that a little bit. Were people even thinking about it?
No.
Was it something that is kind of taboo, perhaps, or someone didn't want to initiate that? So sometimes you need a facilitator like a raise to do it?
Yeah, it's a sensitive issue. And on top of that, it's been traditionally dealt with by NGOs and government, right, working together. And private sector has kind of stood on the outside.
Okay.
But helping them understand what the role is, their role in the whole ecosystem of child protection in travel and tourism. We also worked with a group called Sustinations Vietnam, which is a Vietnamese business association that focuses on sustainability. And so through them, we organized workshops for Vietnamese, local Vietnamese tourism and hospitality companies. And the workshops were in Vietnamese to explain what the issue is and how Vietnamese tourism and hospitality companies can, you know, enact policies and programs, HR, everything to help do their part in child protection. So it was really breaking down the entire ecosystem. So it's not one entity's responsibility. Mm. It's, you know, you have border guards, you have tour guides, you have front, you know, reception staff, you have CEOs of hotels making sure that their staff are all protected. You have law enforcement, you have government, community officials, everything. Everyone has their part to play. And so that's what we were able to set up, is explain, you know, who the different stakeholders are and how do you partner together and what are the programs that could be developed and easily slotted into your standard HR employee onboarding process.
I think cross-functional kind of partnerships, especially they're external.
Yeah.
Partnerships within teams already, within companies are difficult, but outside, that's even more challenging. And sometimes having an outside perspective can be quite helpful.
I think what was super impactful from what Mimi had told me before was it was actually partly COVID that created the reset, right?
Yeah.
The tourism sector in Vietnam and hospitality has grown so fast, right? And they've been so focused on growth.
Mm.
And what COVID unfortunately did was give a break.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only through that break that then people were willing to think about even pursuing this topic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that gave Mimi the opportunity to come in and say, okay, this is what we can do in this amount of time. And let's go before all the tourists come back.
Yep.
Let's talk about the trend of ESG. Mm. You know, we can see it in our snapshot of the event. I think seeing that activity and community was promising and hopefully leading to more and more outcomes as the conversation continues, leading to our second event. I'm marketing for the second event already. Tickets to be released soon. My question for you, Vung, would be more about where do you believe this industry to be going? We talk a lot about companies adopting it, putting into their business plans. They're starting to engage partners and facilitators to make it happen. Give us that 5-year time horizon based on what you two know right now. Where will ESG be in 5 years?
So what I think we can see is that as different companies are embracing partners, number one, it's to understand still what ESG is. So the next 5 years will also be a lot about education, right? And so what do different companies need to do? How does that affect their sector? How does that affect their growth? I think in the next 5 years, you will see that being less a checkbox marking exercise and really people thinking about also within that company, what are our strengths that would add to the strategy, right? So for example, an HR company really thinking about the fact that their capacity is in managing people, right? And so the S side of their company will be super important, and how they build out that strategy and how they better communicate mm-hmm. about that strategy and how they're building value in that company. So I think you'll see the communication, the conversation being much stronger, much deeper, and then understanding that the value of the company now goes across, you know, different indicators of environmental, social, and governance. Mm. It's not just a thing where it's like, oh, well, we have a more diverse board, so I guess we're better people. Mm-hmm. I think they will really start to see that the resilience of a company to shocks based on the fact that they're starting to measure the right things, they're starting to talk about the right things.
Mm-hmm. Follow-up question to that, Mimi, is are there enough experts in this field, would you say, in Vietnam? And, you know, experts is hard to define. Yeah. I think, well, the two of you have been doing this for so long, so hopefully you're in that bucket. But I think, let's say I'm a company, a big one, I'm just taking this very seriously. I've engaged with Raise or another consultancy. But then suddenly, over the years, you kind of need an in-house team also to complement that. Are there enough people that have that expertise to help drive that change?
I don't think yet, if you were saying right now, but it's growing, it's developing. And I think that's something that we are very conscious of, and we want to help grow the field, especially with homegrown, especially with local Vietnamese experts. You really, really have to understand Vietnam.
So I have a follow-up question to that. Let's say I'm a young person.
I have something to add to that, too.
Oh, please, yeah.
Which is that at this moment, I think the landscape for these kinds of practitioners for ESG is really fragmented, right? So you would have some very strong people who know a lot about environment. You have some people who know about social, and then you have the regular sort of big four who know a lot about corporate governance, right? Mm-hmm. But you don't have a lot of consultants or partners who know about the ESG as like one holistic thing.
And it's that intersectionality again.
And something that Mimi and I are super excited about is starting to bring together those kinds of practitioners to work together on projects, right?
So let's say I'm a young person listening to today's podcast. I live here in Vietnam. I'm listening to you two. Maybe I looked at the event, but the ticket price was out of my reach. it is, you know, up there in a good way. Values there. Mimi, so my question for you would be, I'm a young person interested in this space. How do I get started? Who do I talk to? How can I learn about this? And if there isn't anything to learn from, particularly in Vietnamese language, what could be made in order to serve that need?
So there are some groups, some informal groups run by young people who are, this is a really exciting space, about sustainability, about social impact, environmental impact, or just impact in general. I would say get in touch with some of those groups and start joining the meetings. Mm-hmm. So Kelly Vaugh from, who used to be with Lynn Center, she now runs Dear Our Community, which is a organization that helps promote social impact endeavors among environmental impact endeavors among young people. I think it's important to do that. The other thing I always recommend is either, you know, if you can work for an NGO for a year or start heavily volunteering with one, because you need to understand what development is like in Vietnam. ESG is investing in development. That's really what it is. And this is something that Mr. Srini from the Managing Director of British International Investment had said during a conversation with Van and me. He was supposed to be one of the speakers at our conference, but unfortunately had to pull out at the last minute. But he said for him, you know, as far as he's concerned, anyone investing in an emerging market is an impact investor, whether you realize it or not. Because you have to take into consideration all of these development challenges that Vietnam is going through, because that impacts your outcome no matter what, whether it's your ability to hire and keep employees, your diversity in employees, your consumers, you know, your the community or the area in which you're working. Everything is impacted by these development challenges, and so you have to broaden your business plan and your understanding of what investment means and what return means when you're investing in a country like Vietnam and other emerging markets.
And don't forget, you can always intern or work with these two at Raise. So just comment below. You'll find their contact information somewhere. My last question to wrap up today's podcast is for the both of you. We've done a couple hundred episodes on Vietnam Innovators. We finally have you two here. I wanted to wait for the event to happen and hopefully recap that on the show as well. And we use this podcast as a snapshot for people to understand different industries, including the one we talked about today. Now, you two know a lot about what we just discussed. What are areas that you don't know a lot about that would help you do your work better, or just out of your own personal curiosity? And I ask that because I'd like to invite those people onto the show in the future. So maybe not a particular person, maybe there is, perhaps an industry, a topic. I'm going to start with Vung and then over to Mimi as well on that question.
So something that I really want to do more of and support is really working with some of these really interesting green business startups.
Okay.
And so it's not that I don't necessarily know a lot about them, but there are ones that are sort of emerging, right? That those are the people that I really want to tap into and start working with in terms of thinking out their services.
And identifying them. There's so many
how they're looking for their market and their audience, right? I would love that.
I that was a particular community that I felt at the conference was present, but I know that there's many, many more. And perhaps they couldn't afford the ticket, so we had to consider that for next year as well. Not lowering the ticket price, but somehow getting them involved. Over to you, Mimi, same question.
So we do work with a couple small investment funds to develop their ESG strategy or ESG lens kind of investing. I would love to understand more about the investment nuts and bolts. I'm not a finance person, and so my understanding of finance is much more at the macro level.
So what helps drive the final decision
making
at the investment community?
Exactly, because you can't, you want to be able to encourage private sector to pursue these goals and these strategies, but not at the expense of their bottom line. And you know, so what we're always trying to do is show that this can coexist and they can work together. The ability to achieve development goals, ESG goals, and profitability goals should be considered together. And to do that, I really would love to understand more about the ways of working in that sort of that tension or that give and take for investors when they're making that final decision on, is it a either or thing? Is it this versus this? Or is it something that they, assess and take together, right?
Okay. So, well, very good. If you're fitting one of those categories, drop your information. We'd love to hear from you as well. And keep on the lookout for the next Vietnam ESG Investor Conference sometime middle of next year. Vung and Mimi, thank you so much for being on the show today. I wish we had hours more to talk about because I know that we would be talking for hours. If you'd like to get in touch with them, we'll drop their information below very soon, Raise Partners. Thank you so much for you two to be on the show today. It's
a pleasure
to hear from you and learn again, as always. we'll see you guys next time. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
You can also check out the video version of this podcast on our other platforms such as YouTube and Facebook. New episodes are out every week, so don't forget to subscribe to Vietcetera's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube channel for more interesting content.